Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and did you see that article in the Times about Albany's plans to finally shift to e-publishing the bills they're voting on? There was a picture of almost waist-high stacks of paper under all the legislators' desks. Maybe that, and the fact that much of the legislating happens in the last week of the session, explains why every year we hear stories about the surprises contained in the bills. Shocked to discover that even some legislators seem surprised at what they have voted on. Bill Maloney, research coordinator at NYPIRG, the New York Public Interest Research Group, keeps track of a lot of what goes on in the legislative session, as well as advocating for changes. And he joins me now to talk about some of this year's surprises and what might change this inscrutable process. Hey, Bill, welcome to WNYC.
Hey, thank you for having me.
One item, tax breaks for certain co-ops and condos in the city are getting attention right now because of subpoenas issued by the Anti-Corruption Moreland Commission. So let's start with those. There was a bill to extend property tax abatements for all co-op and condo owners in the city that got put off a year in Albany. And by the time it got passed this year, there were other tax breaks included at the last minute, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's not too surprising because real estate is one of the most powerful voices in Albany. They really have a larger presence here in terms of campaign donations and their ability to afford lobbyists. So they're often one of the big beneficiaries of these surprise tax breaks that nobody knows about until they're actually signed into law.
So, for example, for Extel's 157 high-rise condo, what was that issue?
Well, they received several tax breaks, and there was a strong overlap between the passage of this bill and campaign donations to individuals they made, such as Governor Cuomo. They alone gave him $100,000 on the day that this bill passed the Assembly, and that certainly helped to make their voice heard louder when his office was weighing the merits of whether or not this bill should be signed into law.
Extel was one of the five firms that got a subpoena. They gave $100,000 through their affiliates to the governor's campaign just before the bill was signed earlier this year, as you say. So is that why the Moreland Commission wants to look at the records?
Yeah, I think this is a very good example of how Albany works. There's a lot of legislation that gets dealt with, as you mentioned. There's huge piles of paper. There's often well over 10,000 bills active at any given time. No legislator would have the time to read through all of these, especially since many of them are introduced just a few days before they're actually voted on. So often the what actually passes gets decided by who is able to buy access to legislators by showing up to their fundraisers. And in this case, it's a very good example of how a large campaign donor was able to make their voice heard louder than other New Yorkers and potentially help get their bill passed because the other side of the issue just wasn't heard as loudly.
And Extel isn't alone. This isn't just about them as an individual company. I read that Common Cause found that city real estate developers give millions to Albany lawmakers' campaigns, and they're able to donate so much because of the use of LLCs, limited liability corporations, each of which can be counted as a separate individual in terms of campaign finance caps.
Yeah, it's a very bizarre loophole in the law dating back to the 90s where corporations are limited to donating $5,000 in a calendar year to all candidates combined, while individuals, flesh and blood human beings, can give $150,000 a year. But due to some craziness at the State Board of Elections, they determined that LLCs were actually individuals and could give at this level. And a lot of these real estate companies, you'll see, wind up having 10 or 12 different LLCs and can give $150,000 through each of them, which means they can completely circumvent any campaign finance limits that are in place. There's one person alone, Leonard Litwin, who's a developer in the city, who is able to routinely give over $1 million each calendar year. Just this election cycle, he's given Governor Cuomo $625,000 because of this loophole in the law.
How about that? Another of the surprises that came to public view, into public view after the legislative session ended in June, is a bill that the New York Post reported on as helping FedEx drivers unionize. But guess what? It turns out to exclude FedEx. It would have required the drivers to be classified as employees instead of contractors. Is there any way to know exactly how the bill was changed to help FedEx?
FedEx is another example of a company that has donated routinely over the past few years. But I'm not an expert in this particular piece of legislation, but it is one of the many examples of the bills that just gets passed in the middle of the night and rushed through without people having a full time to understand it. There are barely any public hearings on legislation in Albany. Beyond the budget, there's maybe only one every few weeks, despite the fact that they're passing around 600 bills each year. So legislators themselves don't understand what may or may not be in a bill that, like this FedEx bill, and they might have a different view of it and not fully understand what the effects will be until after it's too late to do anything about it and they've already cast a vote, yes or no.
And there are more examples. It was, I guess, an especially rich session for things coming to light afterwards that people didn't realize were issues before the end of the session. Another one that the Wall Street Journal reported on is what critics are calling an 11th-hour bargain, a bill setting up a funding mechanism for Hudson River Park, and it allows the park to sell air rights to nearby developers instead of building inside the park, which could benefit some of the park's advocates, something they claim they didn't know about and wouldn't take advantage of. According to the Journal, the bill was introduced on June 17th and then approved on June 22nd, and legislators said they didn't know when the change to the zoning rules were made. I know this is a little complicated for a lot of people to understand, but it's another example of the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, this bill is a perfect example. It was introduced on the last Monday of session in a week in which the state assembly voted on 537 different bills. There's no time to have a thorough debate about each of them if you're doing over 100 bills each day. And this bill, I believe, was voted on at 4:30 in the morning. Nobody's coherent enough to have a real conversation to consider the merits of dense legalese at that hour. And they're really not just going through these bills with a fine-tooth comb and figuring out what the side effects might be. And unfortunately, that's how all too many bills are made into law in Albany.
And another one passed at the last minute, introduced at the last minute, was the casino expansion bill. Campaign finance limits were dropped at the last minute, if I've been reading that correctly. So to the big picture, there's a rule that legislators have to get 3 days to review bills before voting. Looking at those stacks of papers under their desks, is that enough?
On big-ticket issues and things that make real changes to the law, we certainly think there should be more time to consider them. A lot of these issues are things that were not time-sensitive or that they knew about right from the start of session in January, and there's no reason these bills could have been introduced a few months beforehand. Maybe there could have been more public hearings to discuss the merits of them, to let real experts come in and actually have a chance to discuss what the effects would be, rather than just introducing these bills 3 days ahead of time and passing them in a rush where nobody says a word in debate or actually considers what might happen if they pass it.
So will this Moreland Commission that has been impaneled to look at the process have an impact on how this works?
I think the Moreland Commission has real potential to have an impact on the structure of the system in Albany. We saw an assembly member get arrested a few months ago for taking a bribe to introduce a piece of legislation on behalf of the briber. Unfortunately, that happens all too often, just not as explicitly, but it happens completely legally as long as these people give to the legislators' campaign funds. They can't say a direct quid pro quo, I'll give you $5,000 if you introduce this bill on my behalf, but if they have one-on-one time with the legislator while showing up to one of their fundraisers, they can sell them on a bill just from their own side of view, and they'll have more success getting their legislation passed than anybody else who might reside in New York.
So what changes are you advocating, and you at NYPIRG, to the way money gets tied to legislation?
Well, for starters, the current limits are absurdly high. As I mentioned, we saw one individual who has legally been allowed to give Governor Cuomo over $600,000 this election cycle. That just buys him so much more access than anybody else. And legislators, it's not quite as high, but you see many of them get $50,000 checks from individual donors. And that really leads to a system where they don't have time to meet with everybody who might want to speak to their office about their concerns. And the people who can write these checks just make their voices heard louder. And so one thing the Moreland Commission seems to be doing, and we applaud them for this, is looking into how this system leads to these bizarre or bad bills being passed and how much of this is tied to the campaign finance system. So we do need to lower contribution limits to reduce the potential for this to happen, and also find some way to make it easier for candidates to actually rely on flesh and blood New Yorkers to get their funds. A public financing system like we have in New York City, it would become a lot more feasible for legislators running for office to just look to their constituents and their neighbors for small checks and run their campaigns that way rather than getting money from lobbyists.
It's one of the little-known facts of New York campaign finance that it's legal to give so much more to candidates for state office than it is for candidates for city office, which is a lot of what you've been talking about, right?
Yeah, if somebody wants to write a check to Governor Cuomo, you can actually give him about 12 times as much money as if you wanted to give a check to a candidate for president of the United States.
Hey, when will this Moreland Commission report come out?
Well, they're having a few public meetings starting in September, I believe. And they're going to have a preliminary report out by the end of this year. And I believe they'll be around for all of 2014 to keep on digging into this and come up with more recommendations.
Bill Mahoney from NYPIRC, thanks a lot.
Thank you.